Lucy, I'm home!
Yes, folks, welcome to another episode of Historical Hystericals.
Well, we're back again.
Oh, it's been a while, hasn't it?
Way too long.
Oh, way too long. But don't worry, folks, we're going to try and make these things a little bit more regular if we can. We'll give them a dose of bran and a good shot of prune juice and away we go.
Love doing battle with technology.
So, who are we talking about tonight, Mike?
Well, let's see. She was a shrewd businesswoman, a serious actress, and a Broadway star as well.
Yeah.
I'll give you a couple of her nicknames.
She was known as
Technicolor Tessie.
Yep.
Queen of the B-movies, this is during the 1940s.
Yes.
The First Lady of Television. The Queen of Comedy.
Oh, who else could it be but Lucille Desiree Ball?
Yeah, well, Desiree was the birth name, but everyone just knows her as Lucy.
Generations of TV viewers would know her as Lucy from, of course, I Love Lucy.
Yes, and four more TV shows and so many movies and countless appearances.
There's quite a number of movies that she appeared in where she wasn't even credited. She was just an uncredited extra for years and years and years.
Yeah, we'll go through that. We've got all this research done, so it's going to be a lot of fun.
So much to do.
So, Lucille Desiree Ball was born on August 6th, 1911, and was world famous as an American comedian, film actress, television performer, model, film and television executive, and star of five different sitcoms.
Five sitcoms. Lucy was born to Henry Durell Ball and Desiree D.D. Evelyn Hunt in Jamestown, New York. Although Lucy was born in Jamestown, New York, she sometimes claimed that she was born in Butte, Montana for some reason.
While D.D. Ball, her mother, was pregnant with her second child, Frederick, Henry, her dad, contracted typhoid fever... Ever have one of those words that you just can't stumble around? Typhoid fever.
Typhoid fever.
He died in February 1915. Lucy recalls little from the day her father died, only fleeting memories of a pitcher falling and a bird getting trapped in the house. From that day forward, she suffered from ornithophobia.
And you thought typhoid fever was hard.
Yeah, but basically she suffered from a fear of birds.
So Alfred Hitchcock would not have been her favourite person. Now, after her father died, Lucy and her brother Fred Henry Ball were raised by her mother and her grandparents in Celeron, New York.
Her grandfather, Fred Hunt, was an eccentric who also enjoyed the theatre. He frequently took her family to vaudeville shows and encouraged young Lucy to take part in both her own and school plays. 4 years after the death of her father, Lucy's mother, Dee Dee, remarried. While her stepfather, Edward Peterson, and her mother went to look for work in another city, Lucy was left in the care of her stepfather's parents. Her new guardians were a puritanical Swedish couple who were so opposed to frivolity that they banished all mirrors from the house except for one over the bathroom sink. Now, when the young Lucille was caught admiring herself in the mirror, she was severely chastised for being vain.
Now, they banished all the mirrors. Are you sure they weren't vampires?
Now, one good thing did come out of Dee Dee's new marriage. Edward was a Shriner. When his organisation needed female entertainers for the chorus line in the next show, he encouraged his 12-year-old stepdaughter to audition.
Oh, boy, slave labour.
While Lucy was on stage, she began to realise that if one was seeking praise and recognition, this was a brilliant way to receive it. Her appetite for recognition had thus been awakened in the early age of 12. In 1927, her family suffered misfortune when their house and furnishings were taken away in a legal judgment after a neighbourhood boy accidentally shot and paralysed by some target shooting in their yard. That was under Lucy's grandfather's supervision. So the puritanical grandfather didn't mind shooting things in the backyard.
Didn't want mirrors, but didn't mind popping the odd shot off at the neighbourhood kids.
That's when the family moved to a small apartment in Jamestown.
I think that would have been a good move. Anywhere that didn't have guns would be good. In 1925, Lucy, who was only 14 at the time, started dating Johnny DeVito. Johnny was a 23-year-old local hood. Dee Dee, understandably, was unhappy with the relationship, but was unable to influence her daughter to end it. She expected the romance to burn out in a few weeks, but that didn't happen. After about a year, Dee Dee tried to separate them using Lucille's desire to go into show business. Despite the family's meagre finances, she arranged for Lucy to go to the John Murray Anderson School of Dramatic Arts in New York, where Bette Davis was a fellow student. This was a terrible failure. The school's owner even wrote to Lucy's mother that she was wasting her money. Lucy went back to high school in Celeron, and Lucy later said about that time in her life that all I learnt in drama school was how to be frightened.
Lucy was determined to prove her teachers wrong and returned to New York City in 1928. Among her other jobs, she landed work as a fashion model for the Hattie Carnegie. The career was thriving when she became ill, either with rheumatic fever or rheumatoid arthritis, or some other unknown illness, and was unable to work for 2 years. She moved back to New York City in 1932 to resume pursuit of a career as an actress, and supported herself by again working for Carnegie as the Chesterfield cigarette girl. As Diane Belmont, she started getting some chorus work on Broadway, but the work wasn't lasting. Lucy was hired, but then quickly fired by theatre impresario Earl Carroll from his Vanities by Florence Ziegfeld.
Ah, oh, that'd be part of the Ziegfeld Follies.
Yes, the one.
That's the one.
From a touring company of Rio Rita, and was let go from the Schubert Brothers production of Stepping Stones.
Now, I bet all these guys, 10, 15 years later, were absolutely kicking themselves.
But, interesting, working under the name of Diane Belmont.
Yeah, you didn't really picture her as a Diane, but anyway. Now, after an uncredited stint of one of the Goldwyn girls in Roman Scandals in 1933, she permanently moved to Hollywood to appear in films. She appeared in many small roles in movies in the 1930s as a contract player for RKO Radio Pictures, including two real comedy shorts with the Three Stooges, as she was in the Three Little Pigskins in 1934, and in a movie with the Marx Brothers called Room Service in 1938.
Now, I do know I can find the Three Stooges clip on YouTube, so I'll post that on our Facebook page so everyone can chase that up.
Yes, remember to check out the Facebook page while you're around, there you go.
Yes, and we'll be posting lots of videos from Lucy through her career.
Mm-hmm. Now, in 1933, she was cast as a last-minute replacement for one of the 12 Goldwyn girls in the Eddie Cantor movie Roman Scandals, directed by Busby Berkeley. I think we mentioned that a little bit earlier. Now, during the filming, when Lucy volunteered to take a pie in the face, the legendary Berkeley is said to have commented, "Get that girl's name. That's the one that will make it."
And wasn't he right?
It is a complete art to be able to take a pie in the face. It just goes like this, Mike.
Thank you. Also, while filming Roman Sandals, Lucy was portraying a slave girl and needed to have her eyebrows entirely shaved off. They never grew back.
I'm sorry, just the things you do to be in a movie. Now, she can also be seen as one of the feature models in the Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers film Roberta in 1935, and briefly as a flower girl in Top Hat 1935, as well as a brief supporting role at the beginning of Follow the Fleet, which was another of the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers films in 1936. Now, a lot of these films, she's uncredited.
This is what I like about watching some of those old movies, seeing these bit players before they became famous.
Yeah, love doing that. And,
and honestly, if I can get my hands on Roberta or Top Hat, the Fred Astaire Ginger Rogers films, I really will be looking out for Lucy in those ones. Now, as it turns out, Ginger Rogers is a distant maternal cousin of Lucy's. Now, she and Ginger played aspiring actresses in the hit film Stage Door in 1937, co-starring Katharine Hepburn. In 1936, she also landed a role she hoped would lead to a Broadway in the play Hey Diddle Diddle. Now, this was a comedy set in a duplex apartment in Hollywood. The play premiered in Princeton in New Jersey on January 21st, 1937, with Lucy playing the part of Julie Tucker, one of three roommates coping with neurotic directors, confused executives, and grasping stars who interfere with the girl's ability to get ahead. The play received good reviews, but there were problems, chiefly with its star, Conway Terle, who was in poor health. Cormac wanted to replace him, but the producer, Ann Nichols, said the fault lay with the character and insisted that the part needed to be reshaped and rewritten. The two were unable to agree on a solution, and the play was scheduled to open on Broadway at the Vanderbilt Theatre, but was closed after 1 week in Washington, D.C., when Terle suddenly became gravely ill. Lucy was then signed to Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer in the 1940s, but she never achieved major stardom from her appearances in these films.
She was known in many Hollywood circles as the Queen of the B-Movies, a title that referred to... a title that was previously held by Fay Wray. Fay Wray, of course, from King Kong fame, for starring in a number of B-movies in the 1930s.
Now, I might just point out what a B-movie was. Back in those days, you'd see what they called a double feature. So you'd have an A-movie, which is the top shelf, this is the film everyone wanted to see, and a B-movie, which was a low-budget, not-so-popular film.
The precursor type movie, yeah.
And then you'd have a couple of cartoon shorts as well. So you'd go and see shorts and two films, unlike today where you just go see the one. So, as I say, Queen of the Bees, she became known for appearing in a lot of these B-grade movies.
Doesn't necessarily mean bad movies. I mean, today that you talk about B-grade movies, you talk about generally bad movies, whereas then it was just sort of the lesser-known movie or
Lower budget.
So, yeah, a little bit on the cheaper, but not necessarily a bad movie, just the B-movie. Now, 1939's Five Came Back was one of the ones that she was in, but like many budding starlets, Lucy picked up radio work to earn some extra income on the side, as well as gain exposure. In 1937, she appeared as a regular on The Phil Baker Show, and when that completed its run in 1938, she joined the cast of The Wonder Show, starring future Wizard of Oz Tin Man Jack Haley. Now, there's a name from Hollywood. It was here that she began her 50-year professional relationship with Gail Gordon, who served as the show's announcer. The Wonder Show only lasted one season when the final episode aired on April the 7th, 1939. Now, Gail Gordon is a name that features a lot in her life.
Yes, four of her TV series featured Gail Gordon as the male co-star.
And he generally played a relative, didn't he?
Yeah. The day she first met Desi Arnaz, she had a black eye, a torn dress from filming a fight scene for a dance girl dance in 1940. And he didn't find her at all that attractive until they met again later in the same day when she changed into her own clothes and makeup. He is often quoted saying that his first impression of her extraordinary beauty was, "That's a hunk of woman!"
Whereas the first time he saw her, he went, "Yes!"
The two connected immediately and eloped the same year. Although Desi was drafted into the army in 1942, he ended up being classified for limited service due to a knee injury. As a result, Desi stayed in Los Angeles organizing and performing in USO shows for wounded GIs being brought back from the Pacific. The same year, Lucy appeared opposite Henry Fonda in The Big Street. She plays a paralyzed nightclub singer and Fonda portrays a busboy who idolizes her. The following year, Lucy appeared in Du Barry Was a Lady, a film for which the natural brunette first had her hair dyed a flaming red, which would then become her trademark. During a Barbara Walters interview, Jane Fonda claimed that her father, Henry Fonda, was deeply in love with Lucille Ball, and the two were very close during the filming of Yours, Mine and Ours in 1968.
Now, even though Desi and Lucy were only 6 years apart in age, apparently it wasn't really socially acceptable for an older woman to marry a younger man, and hence split the difference in their ages, both claiming a 1914 birthday, until this was disproved some years later. Lucy and Desi were married a second time in 1946 in a church because his mother believed that the reason they didn't have children yet was because they were never married in a Catholic church. In 1946, Lucy starred in Lover Come Back.
In 1948, Lucy was cast as Liz Cougar, later Cooper, a wacky wife in My Favourite Husband, a radio program for the CBS radio network. The program was successful and CBS asked her to develop it for television. She agreed, but insisted on working with Desi. The CBS executives were reluctant, thinking the public would not accept an all-American redhead and a Cuban as a couple. CBS was originally not impressed with a pilot episode produced by the couple's Desi Lou Productions company. So the couple toured on the road in a vaudeville act, with Lucy as the zany housewife wanting to get into Desi's shows. When CBS still refused to consider the show, Lucy and Desi used their own money to film the pilot episode of the show, I Love Lucy. It premiered in October of 1951 and instantly became the most popular television show in America. CBS picked it up before the show's 30-minute episode was over.
That speaks volumes for the show. The I Love Lucy show was not only a star vehicle for Lucy, but a way for her to try to salvage her marriage to Desi, which had become a little bit strained, in part by the fact that each had a hectic performing schedule and that often kept them apart. Along the way, she created a television dynasty and reached several firsts. Lucy was the first woman in television to be head of a production company, Desi Lu, the company that she and Desi had formed. And after her divorce, Lucy bought out Desi's share of the studio and she proceeded to function as a very active studio head, be it a red one.
Desi Lu and I Love Lucy pioneered a number of methods still in use in television production today, such as filming before a live studio audience with a number of cameras and distinct sets adjacent to each other. During this time, Lucy taught a 32-week comedy workshop. Now, Lucy was quoted as saying, "You can't teach someone comedy. They either have it or they don't."
When the show premiered, most shows were aired live from New York City studios to Eastern and Central Time viewing audiences and captured by Cinescope for broadcast later to the West Coast. The Cinescope picture was inferior to the film. As a result, the West Coast broadcasts were inferior to those that were seen elsewhere in the country. Lucy and Desi wanted to remain in their Los Angeles home, but the time zone logistics made that broadcast impossible. Prime time in LA was too late in the night for the East Coast to air and major network studios across the country, meaning the majority of the TV audience would be seeing not only the inferior picture on Cinescope, but seeing it too late in the day to really make it a hit.
Sponsors Philip Morris did not want to show a day-old Cinescope to the major markets on the East Coast, yet neither did they want to pay the extra cost for filming, producing, and editing would require, pressuring Lucy and Desi to relocate to New York City. Lucy and Desi offered to take a pay cut to finance filming on the condition that their company, Desi Lu, would retain the rights to that film once it had aired. CBS relinquished the show's rights back to Desi Lu after initial broadcast, not realising they were giving away a valuable, durable asset.
Well, could you say residuals?
Desi Lu made many millions of dollars on I Love Lucy on rebroadcasts through syndication, and became a textbook example of how a show can be profitable in second-run syndication. In television's infancy, the concept of a rerun hadn't yet formed, and many of the in the industry wondered who would want to see a program a second time. In fact, while other celebrated shows of the period exist only in incomplete sets of kinescopes, mostly too degraded to show and to subsequent generations of TV viewers, I Love Lucy has virtually never gone out of syndication since it began, seen by hundreds of millions of people around the world over the past half century. The success of Lucy and Desi's Gambles was instrumental in drawing television production from New York to Hollywood for the next several decades.
Now, I remember coming home from school and you'd watch Get Smart and I Love Lucy, and it was just sort of the way things went. And for years and years and years, it just Lucy was on, and she was always there. And then it became a Saturday morning thing. You'd tune in, and there's Lucy again. She just seemed to be everywhere on TV all over Australia.
That's amazing. For about 50 years, I Love Lucy has always been aired somewhere.
You can probably find it right now. Desi Lu hired legendary German cameraman Karl Freund as the director of photography. Sorry, Karl, if I got that wrong. But Karl had worked with many, many other people, including Fritz Lang, who shot Metropolis in 1927. And also the original Dracula with Bela Lugosi, and he directed a number of Hollywood films himself, including The Mummy with Boris Karloff. Now, that's a pretty impressive resume to have. Now, he used a three-camera setup, which became the standard way of filming situation comedies, shooting long shots, medium shots, and close-ups on a comedy in front of a live studio audience, demanding discipline, technique, and close choreography. Among other non-standard techniques used in the filming of the show, cans of paint in shades ranging from white to medium grey were kept on set to paint out inappropriate shadows and disguise lighting flaws. Now, how's that for technical, you know?
Well, yeah.
I don't want that shadow. Quick, paint it out. But doesn't the shadow form over the top anyway? Just you're painting the shadow, but the shadow's still there. Help! It won't go away.
Oh dear. Now, Carl also pioneered flat lighting, in which everything is brilliantly lit to eliminate shadows and the need for endless relighting.
Within 6 months, the show was rated number one. It ran 6 seasons on its original format and evolved into an hour-long specials. It won over 20 awards, among them 5 Emmys, the highest award for television programming. The characters, Lucy and Ricky Ricardo, became household words, with William Frawley and Vivian Vance superbly cast as the long-suffering neighbours Fred and Ethel Mertz. More viewers tuned in for the television birth of little Ricky Ricardo than the President Dwight D. Eisenhower's inauguration. The show was the first in television history to claim viewing of more than 10 million homes.
That's pretty impressive, considering the amount of TVs that were around back then. I mean, these days, the opening of an envelope gets 10 million viewers, but back then, that was really impressive. I Love Lucy, of course, dominated the weekly TV ratings in the United States for most of its run, but there was an attempt to adapt the show to radio. The cast and writers took the memorable episode Breaking the Lease. Now, that's the one in where the Ricardos and the Mertzes fall out over an argument, and the Ricardos threaten to move on, but they find out they're stuck into a firm lease. Now, this was done for radio. They did an audition disc, and it's never been aired, but apparently it has survived somewhere. Now, in the scene where Lucy and Ricky are practicing the tango in the episode Lucy Does the Tango, the longest recorded studio audience laugh in the history of the show was produced. It was so long, in fact, that the sound editors had to cut that particular part of the soundtrack in half.
Imagine, they're laughing so hard, we're just standing there waiting for them to stop laughing. Oh, we'll just edit this bit out.
Yeah, we'll just cut that down. Yeah, thanks, guys. You can stop laughing now!
The strenuous rehearsals and demands of Desilu Studios kept the Arnezes too busy to comprehend the show's success. During the show's production breaks, they starred together in feature films, Vincent Minnelli's The Long, Long Trailer and Alexander Hall's Forever Darling.
Now, The Long, Long Trailer, that one was probably the first Lucille Ball film I saw, where her and Desi are on a, I think it might even be their honeymoon, driving around the Grand Canyon or something.
Yeah, right across America.
Yeah, it just goes, it's a hilarious film. It still stands up as a good comedy even these days. So if you get a chance, find it, watch it. Really
love
good.
Love it. She decided she wanted to collect boulders from every state they went in.
Yeah.
So she's putting them in this caravan behind the car, and then they go down this long, winding road, and slowly all these boulders break out of the cupboards and the ovens and just start rolling around the back of the caravan. It's hysterical.
The scene I remember the most was when she decided to cook breakfast, I think it was, or cook dinner, while they were driving from one spot to another. And they pull up, Ricky opens the door, and there's Lucy just sitting there with food all over her, going, Ricky!
There's another one I think I'm going to have to try and find on YouTube so I can post on the Facebook page. Mm. Desilu produced several other popular shows, most noticeably Ah, Miss Brooks, starring Lucy's 1937 stage door co-star Eve Arden. They also produced The Untouchables, Star Trek, Mission Impossible.
Hang on, back up. Star Trek?
Yeah.
They were the
production house for the original Star Trek TV series.
There you go. You learn something new every day, don't you, guys?
Many other shows, particularly My Three Sons and its first 7 of the 12 seasons. Sheldon Leonard produced series like Make Room for Daddy, The Dick Van Dyke Show, The Andy Griffith Show, and I Spy were filmed at Desilu Studios and bear its logo. And Desilu was eventually sold and merged into Paramount Pictures in 1967.
Big merger. Mm. Now, when Lucy registered to vote in 1936, she listed her party affiliation as communist. Bit of controversy there. She was registered as a communist in 1938 as well. In order to support the Communist Party's 1936 candidate for the California State Assembly's 57th District, Lucy signed a certificate stating, "I am a registered affiliation of the Communist Party." Did I get that right?
No, I am registered as affiliated with the Communist Party.
Thank you, Mike.
Yes.
The same year she was appointed to the State Central Committee of the Communist Party of California, according to the records of the Californian Secretary of State. In 1937, Hollywood writer René Velve, a self-identified former communist, attended a Communist Party new members class at Lucy's home, according to Vail's testimony in 1940. 2 years later, Vail reaffirmed this testimony in a sworn
Deposition.
Deposition. Thank you.
He said in the deposition.
Blah.
Within a few days after my third application to join the Communist Party was made, I received a notice to attend a meeting in North Odgan Drive, Hollywood. Although it was typed, unsigned note, merely requesting my presence at the address at 8 o'clock in the evening on the given day, I knew it was the long-awaited notice to attend the Communist Party's new members' classes. On arrival at this address, I found several others present. An elderly man informed us that we were the guests of the screen actress Lucille Ball, and showed us various pictures, books, and other objects to establish the fact, and stated that she was glad to loan her home to the Communist Party's new members' class.
Mm. Controversy.
In a 1944 British Paith newsreel titled Fundraising for Roosevelt, Lucy was featured prominently among several stage and film stars as fundraising at a fundraising event to support Democratic President Franklin D. Roosevelt's campaign for re-election. She also stated that in the 1952 U.S. presidential election, she voted for Republican Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Now, on September the 4th, 1953, Lucy met privately with HUAC investigator William A. Wheeler in Hollywood and gave him sealed testimony. She stated that she had registered to vote as a communist, or intended to vote the Communist Party ticket, in 1936 at her socialist grandfather's insistence. She stated she at no time intended to vote as a communist. Lucy stated that she had never been a member of the Communist Party to her knowledge. She did not know whether or not any meetings were held at her home at 1344 North Ogden Drive, stated that if she had been appointed as a delegate to the State Central Committee of the Communist Party of California in 1936, it was done without her knowledge or consent. And she stated that she did not recall signing the document sponsoring Emil Fried for the Communist Party nomination to the office of the member of the Assembly of the 57th District. A review of the subject file reflects no activity that would warrant her inclusion on the security index. Do I get a round of applause for that?
You got through it.
Yay!
J. Edgar Hoover, then director of the FBI, named Lucy and Desi among his favourites of the entertainment world. Immediately before the filming of episode 68, The Girls Go Into Business, of I Love Lucy, Desi, instead of his usual audience warm-up, told the audience about Lucy and her grandfather. Reusing the line that he'd given to Hedda Hopper in an interview, he quipped, "The only thing red about Lucy is her hair, and even that's not legitimate."
On July the 17th, 1951, 1 month before her 40th birthday, and after several miscarriages, Lucy gave birth to her first child, Lucy Desiree Arnaz. A year and a half later, Lucy gave birth to her second child, Desiderio Alberto Arnaz IV. Now that's a mouthful, isn't it? Known as Desi Arnaz Jr. Now when he was born, I Love Lucy was a solid ratings hit, and Lucy and Desi wrote the pregnancy into the show. Lucy's necessary and planned cesarean section in real life was scheduled for the same date that her television character planned to give birth. That's really good. Although there would probably be something about that in WorkSafe these days, about being pregnant right up to the point of giving birth. There were several challenges from CBS insisting that a pregnant woman could not be shown on television, nor could the word pregnant be spoken on air. After approval from several religious figures, the network allowed the pregnancy storyline, but insisted the word expecting be used instead of pregnant. Desi gained laughs when he deliberately mispronounced it as spectin. Because with his accent that would sound hilarious. With my accent it just sounds like I don't know what I'm talking about.
The episode's official title was Lucy is Insanite, borrowing the French word for pregnant. However, episode titles never appeared on the show. The birth made the first cover of TV Guide in January 1953.
Aww.
In October 1956, Lucy, Vivian Vance, Desi Arnaz, William Frawley all appeared on a Bob Hope special on NBC, including a spoof of I Love Lucy, the only time all four stars were together on a colour telecast.
Wow.
By the end of the 1950s, Desi Lu had become a large company, causing a good deal of stress for both Lucy and Desi. is increased drinking further compounded matters.
Now, I've heard that Lucy and Desi's coupling had been tumultuous in the late 50s, and after 179 episodes of the I Love Lucy show, they decided to call it quits to save their marriage. While they said goodbye to the old show, they began taping another one named the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour. The 60-minute show didn't need the time and attention of the previous program, and Lucy and Desi once again seemed happy and in love. Desi spent time in the recording studio with his band and more home at time working with Desi Lu.
On May 4th, 1960, just 2 months after the filming of the final episode of the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, the couple divorced. Until his death in 1986, however, Desi and Lucy remained friends and often spoke very fondly of each other. Her real-life divorce indirectly found its way into her later television series, and she was later cast as an unmarried woman. The following year, Lucy did a musical on Broadway, Wildcat, co-starring Paula Stewart. That marked the beginning of a 30-year friendship between Lucy and Paula Stewart, who introduced her to her second husband, Gary Morton. He was a Borscht Belt stand-up comic who was 13 years her junior. Now, according to Lucy, Morton claimed to have never seen an episode of I Love Lucy due to his hectic work schedule. Lucy immediately installed him into the production company, teaching him the television business and eventually promoting him to producer. He also played the occasional bit part on Lucy's various series.
I get the feeling Lucy had something for younger men here, because Desi was younger than her, this guy's younger than her, you know, a bit of a cradle snatcher as he was.
Nothing wrong with that.
The 1960 Broadway musical Wildcat ended its run early when Lucy became too ill to continue the show. There's a very famous song that came from that show, which was Hey, Look Me Over, which Lucy performed with Paula Stewart on The Ed Sullivan Show. She made a few more movies, including Yours, Mine and Ours in 1968 and, of course, the musical Mame in 1974. She also had two more successful long-running sitcoms for CBS, The Lucy Show, 1962 to 1968, with her co-star Vivian Vance and Gail Gordon, and Here's Lucy from 1968 to 1974, which also featured Gail Gordon. Now, he was her brother-in-law.
Brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And boss and of boss. An agent, a temp working agency.
And I can't remember his character's name. Oh. Gone out of my head.
Yes, that's.
And also, the show Here's Lucy also featured Lucy Arnaz and Desi Arnaz Jr.,
Keep
it in the family. Give the kids a job as well.
Also, Harry,
that was it. Harry. And also Dick Van Dyke appeared on that show too.
Oh, really?
He did, yes. Very. He walked in to the house, started to walk across the lounge room, tripped over a stool, did a double somersault and came up on his feet again. Dick Van Dyke all over.
I'm trying to remember. I think it was the Lucy Show, 62, 68, where there was a guest appearance by Harpo Marx.
Hmm.
And Lucy, dressed in a Harpo costume, does the famous mirror scene.
Ah, yes.
But with Harpo.
Yes.
And that, I know, is on YouTube. That's going to be on our Facebook page. Check that out.
Which one of the shows was it that had the pie scene?
I think that was the original I Love Lucy.
The original I Love Lucy.
Along with the chocolate conveyor belt scene.
Oh. We've got to find those and put those up on YouTube. They are just classic moments of comedy.
Lucy appeared in the Dick Cavett Show in 1974 and spoke of her history and life with Desi. She revealed how she felt about other actors and actresses, as well as her love for Desi. Referring to her divorce from Desi and marriage to Morton, she said that the success of her life was getting rid of what was wrong and replacing it with what was right.
Ooh.
Lucy also revealed in this interview that the strangest thing that ever happened to her was after she had some dental work completed, and having lead fillings in her teeth, she started hearing radio stations in her head. She explained that she came home one night from the studio and was passing one area. She heard what she thought was Morse code, or tapping. She stated that as I backed up, it got stronger. The next morning, I reported it to the authorities, and upon investigation, they found a Japanese radio transmitter that had been buried and was actively transmitting codes back to the Japanese. The extraordinary theory that dental fillings could pick up radio signals would ultimately be tested and debunked on the TV show Mythbusters nearly 30 years later.
But it's such a good story, guys. Come on! Oh, yeah. Lucy finds the Japanese. There you go. Lucy was originally considered by Frank Sinatra for the role of Mrs. Ireland in The Manchurian Candidate. Director and producer Jack Frankenheimer, however, had worked with Angela Lansbury in another role in All Fall Down and insisted on her having the part. Now, Angela Lansbury is, of course, Murder, She Wrote, and is...
Mrs. Potts in Beauty and the Beast for Disney.
And also the stage show Driving Miss Daisy with James Earl Jones.
Yeah. During the mid-1980s, she attempted to resurrect her television career. In 1982, she hosted a two-part Three's Company's retrospective, showing clips from the show's first five seasons, summarising memorable plotlines and commenting on her love for the show. A 1985 dramatic made-for-TV film about an elderly homeless woman called Stone Pillow received mixed reviews. Her 1986 sitcom comeback, Life with Lucy, co-starring her long-time foil Gail Gordon and co-produced by Lucy, Gary Morton and prolific producer and former actor Aaron Spelling, was cancelled in less than 2 months into the run by ABC. Her last public appearance, just 1 month before her death, was at the 1989 Academy Awards telecast, in which she and fellow presenter Bob Hope were given a standing ovation.
As they should be.
That's also a YouTube clip going to be linked up. That is stunning. They just walk on stage, and everybody in Hollywood just stood on their feet. It was amazing.
Yeah, for me, I can't look at Lucy without thinking of my mother, because the similarities in appearance when my mum were younger, it just absolutely would blow you away.
I thought it was a way she just broke into tears at the smallest thing.
Well, there's that too, but yeah. She was also a little bit superstitious, was our young Lucy, and she had a superstition about the letters A and R, which is why her character was named Lucy Ricardo, with the capitals on the A's and the R's, and Lucy Carmichael, it's with capitals on the A's and the R's, in The Lucy Show, Lucy Carter in Here's Lucy, and Lucy Barker in Life of Lucy. She was also married to Desi Arnaz. She believed she didn't have luck in her career until she changed her name to Arnaz, with the A and the R.
There you go.
Kind of quirky. But then again, she was a redhead. Or was she?
On April 18th, 1989, Lucy was at her home in Beverly Hills when she complained of chest pains. An ambulance was called and she was rushed to the emergency room of Cedars Sinai Medical Center. She was diagnosed with a dissecting aortic aneurysm and underwent heart surgery for nearly 8 hours. She received an aorta from a 27-year-old male donor, and the surgery was successful, and Lucy began recovering very quickly, even walking around a room with a little assistance. On April 26, shortly after dawn, Lucy woke with a severe back pain. Her aorta had ruptured in a second location, and Lucy quickly lost consciousness. All attempts to revive her had proved unsuccessful, and she died. She was 77 years old. Her ashes were initially interred at Forest Lawn Hollywood Hills Cemetery in Los Angeles, but in 2002 her children moved her remains to the family plot at Lakeview Cemetery in Jamestown, New York, where Lucy's parents, brother, and grandparents are buried. So she died on the morning of April 26, 1989, the 56th birthday of her friend Carol Burnett. That afternoon, Carol Burnett received flowers that Lucy had ordered for her birthday.
Oh, wow. That'd be kind of spooky, wouldn't it? Because you'd get the message that she'd passed, and then the flowers would arrive.
That would rip your heart out.
Oh. Now, Lucy received many prestigious awards throughout her career, including some received posthumously, such as the President's Medal of Freedom by President George H.W. Bush, not to be confused with George Bush, on July the 6th, 1989, and the Women's International Centre for Living's Legacy Award. There is a Lucille Ball Desi Arnaz Centre Museum in Lucy's hometown in Jamestown, New York, and the Little Theatre was renamed the Lucille Ball Little Theatre in her honour.
Lucy was among Time magazine's 100 most important people of the century. On August 6th, 2001, which would have been her 90th birthday, the United States Postal Service honoured her with a commemorative postage stamp as part of its Legends of Hollywood series. Lucy appeared on the cover of TV Guide more than any other person, She appeared on 39 covers, including the very first cover in 1953 with her baby son, Desi Arnaz Jr.
Oh. A TV Guide voted Lucille Ball as the greatest TV star of all time. And later it commemorated the 50th anniversary of I Love Lucy with 8 collector covers, celebrating memorable scenes from the show, and in another instance, they named I Love Lucy the second best television program in American history after Seinfeld. I reckon that sucks.
Seinfeld
to me is not that great.
Not compared to Lucy.
You come in 50 years' time and you say Seinfeld and they'll say who?
Yeah. Because of her liberated mindset and approval of the women's movement, Lucy was inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame. She was awarded the Legacy of Laughter Award at the 50th Annual TV Land Awards in 2007. I Love Lucy was named the greatest TV series by Hall of Fame magazine, and TV Guide voted her the greatest TV star of all time in November of that year. Lucille Ball was chosen as the second out of the 50 greatest TV icons after Johnny Carson in a poll done by the public. However, they chose her as the greatest icon.
On August 6th, 2011, which would have been her 100th birthday, Google honoured Lucy with an interactive doodle on their homepage. Sorry, Google having a doodle, this doodle displayed 6 classic moments from the I Love Lucy sitcom. On the same day, a total of 915 Lucy lookalikes converged on Jamestown, New York, to celebrate the birthday and set a new record for such a gathering. 915 redheads.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
On February 8th, 1960, she was awarded 2 stars in the Hollywood Walk of Fame, one for her contributions to motion pictures and one for television.
Lucille Ball. What a woman.
What can we say? We love Lucy. We love the laughter. Thank you very much. Check out our Facebook page. There'll be lots of links to YouTube videos to see Lucy in action.
Oh, you've got to keep an eye out for the one from the big trailer, the long trailer.
If I can find that, yeah, that'll be there.
Look for that one. That's hilarious stuff. But any of the Lucy stuff that you can find on YouTube, take the time, sit down, have a look at some of the stuff. Look at how really good comedy's done. And she was the master, or the mistress, if you will, of the sight gag sort of thing, situation comedy sort of stuff. She was just brilliant.
And character development, and you know, Ricky would say something and you just knew what Lucy's response was going to be, or a situation would come up and you know what Lucy would jump on.
And you remember, you know, Fran Drescher from The Nanny with that really annoying voice and then, watch Lucy, that's where she gets it from.
Yeah, but Lucy did it so much better.
She did. Yeah, she just had that cry whenever things went wrong. You can't help but remember Lucy.
There you go, Lucille Ball on Historical Hystericals.
Yeah, it's been fun, folks, and thank you for tuning in, and thank you to people all around the world for downloading the episodes. We're always absolutely amazed when we see how many countries are downloading episodes of Historical Hystericals.
We'd love for this to be interactive, so do look us up on Facebook.
Yes.
Leave comments, ask questions, make suggestions. Who would you like to hear stories about? That's what we want to know.
Please do. Get on the page. Have a look. Look around. As Mike said, make some comments, make some suggestions. Come up with the comedians that you want to hear from, and we'll do it for you. We will.
And if you're downloading this through iTunes, recommend us and give us some feedback there and recommend us to your friends.
We love your feedback. Anything you'd like to say about the shows, please let us know. Any comments or criticisms, we'll take all the comments and we'll listen to them. We'll take the criticisms and delete them.
In the meantime, we hope we'll get another episode up much sooner than we did last time. We'll keep moving forward. Please keep listening. Tell your friends and enjoy. We got to go.
We got to go. And we'll be back quicker. Next time Mike says, what does this button do? I'll stop him.
See you guys.
See you guys.